6:30. I would like to call to order the joint meeting of the Non-Uniformed and Police and Fire Retirement System meeting. If we could have a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
We have a second.
Second, this is Mary
Second.
Ann.
Marianne Coley for second. Looks like we have to approve two meetings worth of meeting minutes here on the agenda. If you could take a moment to review the January 28th, 2025 meeting minutes, I'll give you a minute to review. We have a motion to approve the January 28th, 2025 meeting minutes.
I move that we approve the January 28th meeting minutes.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Eisenberg, we have a second. Now, the approval of the March 11th, 2025 meeting minutes.
Do you want to do the, you just want to do them both? Okay. I move we accept those minutes as well, March 11th.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All right. We have a second to approve the March 11th, 2025 meeting minutes. Next on the agenda is a recommendation to change for a change in asset allocations in the quarterly portfolio review by F&M Investments.
Mr. Chair, do we have to do a vote on the minutes?
Oh, do we?
Yes.
I'm still new to this. So what do we vote to what is it? Oh, all in
All
favor of
in
the
favor.
minutes? Yeah,
Aye.
sure.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Okay. Moving forward, we are we have F&M Investments, which is presenting a recommendation for a change in asset allocations in the quarterly portfolio review.
Hi, everybody. It's Pam Brown. I think Keith had provided the board with the information that we had sent regarding our recommendations. And I think when we left off on our last call, you had some questions surrounding where the assets for each of the proposed mixes would come from. So I created the spreadsheet, which I believe that he had sent in the board documents. We are recommending either a mix of four or five. And looking through your current holdings, the most of those assets would come from the cover call product that we have, and then some from the large cap ETF as well. We feel like either one of those mixes is going to get you to the performance that you need for those actuarial assumptions. 6.5 to 6.75%. So I didn't know. I also had included some commentary on our large cap S&P product and some commentary on our large cap Russell 1000 product, as well as some past performance on that. So I didn't know if anybody had any questions surrounding the asset mix recommendation, or if you wanted to, have more discussion on that. I feel like we kind of would like to come to some sort of plan instead of letting this go on for another quarter.
I have a question. In the on the chart that you prepared, the middle section, am I understanding this right now that the current percentage for fixed income is 22%?
Correct.
And what you're recommending is 44 to 34%.
If mix four would be right at 40 and mix five would be 30 to 33. And
Wow.
we can tweak those mixes.
Yeah. I just think this is, I mean, the market is terrible and it doesn't matter what we do, it's going to be terrible for a while. And I just can't see knee-jerk reaction going to that high of fixed income that's not even going to make 6.5%. I mean, in my opinion, we just have to ride it out. There's nothing else, just like you do with your 401ks and everything else. But I'd like to hear other people's opinions.
Rich, do you have any comments on fixed income at this point? Rich, you're on mute.
There, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I mean, at our last meeting, we talked about fixed income, and you look sort of the last 5 to 7 years, fixed income has had fairly low total returns, and so I think when we look at today's rates and we look forward the next 2 to 3 years, we think on a risk-adjusted basis, fixed income looks pretty good. And I think that's the reason for the recommendation was that, from my understanding, was to sort of take some risk down on the portfolio while
That's not
still
making big
trying
sense.
to achieve the actuarial target of 6.5%. And so right now, fixed income looks fairly attractive relative to equities, just considering where yields are and where other types of spread product, non-treasury types of instruments are on a yield basis. You're looking close to 5% now in fixed income, which looks historically fairly attractive.
Well,
So that
one.
was the sort of the rationale of our increasing the weight to fixed income, with the idea that there was a desire by the board to sort of reduce the risk while still hitting those actuarial targets.
Well, I mean, I looked up Morningstar and fixed income like at 1 year were 5%, but a 5 year was a negative 0.6%. I just can't agree with moving to fixed income if your target is 6.5%. I mean, it's going to be horrible, but I think you just have to ride it out.
If I could just step in a second. Richard talked about the yield on the aggregate about 5%. And fixed income is kind of, in terms of risk control, is a free lunch, right? Because we know that we're going to earn 5% on that portion of the portfolio going forward for the next several years. We don't know
How
what
do
we're
you
going to
know
earn on
that?
the equities. Excuse me?
How do you know that fixed income is going to be 5%?
Okay. The one
Well, you
exception
look.
would be if interest rates went up higher. But basically, when you buy a bond, you're getting that yield on the bond for for its maturity. Richard, what is the maturity on the average maturity on the Bloomberg Ag Index?
Well, the ag, you're looking at probably a duration of about 6 years.
Yeah.
So you kind of look at the yield, and the yield to worst on the aggregate index, which is the benchmark that we run your current portfolio against. It's 4.6%. Now
Yeah,
that's the ag.
one year.
Now you look at there's different ways of adding additional yield to your portfolio by increasing the weight relative to other sectors to get us a little closer to 5%. Now, on top of that, if we're kind of forecasting that rates will eventually start to come down, and so you get that sort of total return kicker in your portfolio. You say, for example, with a duration of 6, if rates were to rally, fall 1%, that's a 6%, approximately a 6% total return outside of the income that you would earn on your portfolio in fixed income. So, as I said, we look today. Look today. We look, bonds relative to equities, considering the run that equities have had in the last few years. Fixed income looks, relatively attractive.
You're calling bonds fixed income?
Bonds and fixed
Okay.
income. Sorry, I'm using those interchangeably. But yeah, so bonds are fixed income. So yeah, so bond portfolios look relatively attractive today, considering the run-up we've had in equities. And I think the genesis of this conversation that we've been having in the last couple of meetings was to sort of take some risk out of the board's portfolio, if I'm correct on that. And that's why we thought, well, that's why our recommendations are the way we see them, is that we think equities have had a very good run. We really equities are kind of at a crossroads, and fixed income, it looks relatively attractive. It's probably the most attractive it's looked in a while. And the volatility of the portfolio will be reduced because of fixed income, a larger weight, a 10% larger weight than currently is in the portfolio. And the returns relative to what we see potentially coming out of equities look attractive. So the risk return profile looks a little bit more attractive to us in fixed income today than equities. And that's the sort of the reason for our recommendation.
Got it. Thank you. I guess getting back to, again, the reason that we kind of initiated this was our fear of the volatility that would be, coming in with this administration. And so kind of here we are 4 months later, having seen a full quarter of it. And I guess so we're kind of at a point, it seems to me, where it's a question of do we ride this out or do we move to something where we're moving our moving to the fixed income. I for one am I'm kind of feeling like we're still looking at more volatility, and if you guys are advising us that moving towards fixed income would be a safer move for us, then that would be what I would be in favor of. I'll let everybody else speak.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. I guess it's for both for you and Pam, and maybe for Keith. But the different grades you guys had set out, those don't fall outside our asset allocation parameters, do they?
It was not my read that they fell outside of the
I
asset
mean, do we
parameters.
actually need a motion to have that shift within the parameters? It's always been my understanding that that's, that's something that the fund managers could do and just report to us. Is that incorrect, Keith?
No, I
Allowable
think.
range for equities is 25 to 80%, and for fixed income, 20 to 50%. So I would say that'd be in the range.
As long as it's in the range, then they can move the, investments around, because that's according to the investment plan.
Correct. We would have the ability to move those around. The only outliers in that could be your accounts are mainly custodied at UMB Bank, but you also hold some assets at Schwab, which are those non-directed assets. So that's where some of the mid-cap and the large-cap ETFs are held. There isn't really parameters around those. It's just equity that that had been placed in ETFs years ago based on a direction from the board. So in order to get those more within the parameters of the allocations, we probably would have to tweak the guidelines a little bit, but I can look at those. We didn't feel like we should make a substantial change without having this broad discussion with the board.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I just trying to get a feeling of where we're, how we need to get where we need to go.
And while we're talking about ranges, at the top of page five in the uCity Pension Fund Statement of Investment Policies and Objectives, the small and mid cap allocations shall not exceed 15% of the total assets of the respective fund. Were your I guess your mixed proposals, were those small and mid cap proposals limited by the investment policy, or would you have gone higher had the investment policy allowed you to go higher?
We would not have gone higher. And I believe in our last discussion, Don had kind of walked through that efficient frontier, I believe, to show how he actually did limit those because those are riskier. And if we're talking about taking some risk off the table, you want to limit those asset classes because if you have an actuary or assumption and you want to take risk off the table, you have to put some constraints around different asset classes.
Don,
So I'm
did you?
not,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I guess just one more thing. I'm not hearing any pushback on essentially moving the cover call strategy to zero. No one has commented on that. But I think, with that, with the silence around the cover call strategy, I think maybe I assume that everyone is comfortable with moving out of the cover call strategy. But I guess there's some discomfort potentially around moving so much of our portfolio into fixed income.
somebody else has got to have an opinion.
I do not have any going into fixed income. I don't have any reservations about it. It's just when you're talking about trying to hit 6.5% and it's basically giving you five, what are we doing here? We're moving money into a loser for us. You know what I mean? And I understand that if the interest rates go down, we will make more money, but that's if they go down and not just hold steady, right?
That's correct. I mean, yeah, that appreciation from just interest rates moving lower would be the additional total return. That's correct.
Has there been any sign from the Fed that interest rates are going to be lowered?
No, I mean at this point,
Should I
they're
make a
holding
call to the
pat.
chairman real quick?
Excuse me?
I said, should I make a call to the chairman?
Oh, yes, you should make a call to the chairman. No, I think, his focus is very much on inflation at this point. And so with tariffs out there, I mean, as we know, and as everybody's probably been reading, that's going to increase prices in the near term if a lot of these tariffs do pass through. And so he's very aware of that. And so, we're calling here at FM that, rates will probably come down, but it will take longer. And it's probably we probably expect second half of the year that the Fed will begin to lower rates as the economy begins to slow and inflation begins to we get that initial spike from tariffs, and then because inflation is the change in prices, and inflation will sort of begin to sort of track more sideways. And I think at that point the Fed will be more comfortable to ease and start focusing more on growth than inflation. But here we stand today. The Fed has been fairly, and Chair Powell, a week ago on Friday, was pretty adamant that inflation is their guidepost, and they're reluctant to do anything until they understand exactly what the playing field looks like. So our view is that cuts will come later in the year and not
So at least
earlier.
second quarter or third
And
quarter.
yes, exactly. Yeah. Unless something changes. As we sit here today, that's sort of our read and our sort of our forecast that it will be later than sooner, just because the Fed really doesn't know exactly what's going to happen. And until they understand that, then they can start, introducing those known variables into their forecasts and begin to see the data, because we really haven't seen the data yet. I mean, everything, all the hard data that we've seen has been last quarter. So it's been backward looking, and we really haven't seen what's to come. And so that's what the markets have been sort of grappling with, and as well as the Fed. So I think the expectation is the Fed will eventually ease, but like I said, our forecast is it will be later than sooner. So
So,
that
oh,
go
sorry.
ahead. No, go
Like
ahead.
looking at where our investments are right now versus, let's say, mix number five on this page. I'm assuming you guys ran some numbers. What's it look like in comparison to what we have now? Is it looking better just in your crystal ball? Are we sitting better than we are, or is it just moving money from one to the other and we're going to end up the same?
Don, do you remember? Do you have the presentation from last meeting? I don't remember what the numbers were exactly, of our forecasts based on existing allocations.
One thing that I think would have been really helpful on this chart is if, besides, the different mixes, you showed us for each of those types of funds what the returns were for the last 1, 5, and 10 years. Because, our focus should be long term, not short term. And history doesn't by any means predict the future.
I think the presentation that we had for the last meeting had a lot of that historical data, if you have that in front of you.
Returns on it.
Yeah, and that's how we sort of built out the asset allocation, looking at sort of volatilities and returns over the last 5 and 10 years and more, and to come up with these type of recommendations.
Because some of these S&P 400, you said that those were riskier but paid better, right?
Oh, a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Over
Yeah.
time.
So, I mean,
Okay,
you know.
there was information for the S&P product and the Russell 1000 value product that was sent. It is the documents were titled Large Cap Core Performance and Commentary, which is the S&P benchmark product. That does give the 1, 3, 5, and 10 year performance. And the other document that was the large cap value gives the same, it's a summary of what the product is and does give you that 1, 3, 5, and 10 year performance versus the benchmark of the Russell 1000 and the S&P.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at those now. So whereas the let's say the 5 year up at that top part of the chart. 5 years on the S&P 500 was 17%. On the one that I looked at online, fixed income for 5 years was zero minus 0.6%, and the Russell value was 7% at 5 years.
Yes, but that underscores kind of the difficulty here of trying to manage for future returns. When you look, I'm sorry, I have the 10-year returns in front of me from the presentation, and we were looking at an S&P 500 with about 13.5%, a Russell 1000 value at about 9%, and a fixed income at about 1.4%. Now, we felt that the equities were very pricey for some of the things we've already talked about right here. And so, looking at 13.4%, we thought that the next 3 years could see a return at about 6%. As we talked about with the bonds, they're basically locking us in a return of about 5% for the next 3 to 5 years. And the Russell 1000 value, we put at 8%. Now, let me look at those three numbers and kind of see what's happened here at quarter one. For the first quarter, the S&P was down 4.3%. Worse than we expected. The Russell 1000 value was actually up 2%. So it did what we expected. It did a little bit better than equities because of the nature of its holdings. I'm kind of going through here. We had modeled for the S&P 600 9.2% and the S&P 400 10%. and the actual returns on those was minus 9 and minus 6%. So again, this was the reason we went to the safe instrument here in fixed income. And right now, Richard, Pam, any of board members, I challenge you all. I feel a lot less certain than I did at the beginning of this year when we started this exercise.
Yeah.
We can always, if the equity markets come down, we can always move money back in from fixed income.
Hi.
About what?
Well, if you just leave it there, you got to ride it out. If you buy it later when it's on its way up,
Well,
you're buying high, which is what you don't
yeah,
want.
right now the portfolio is about 55% under this asset allocation, still in equities. And if equities do come back and produce their normal 13, 10%, whatever you want to say the long-term return rate is, the portfolio, you're going to meet your actuarial value very easily. The worry is, and we saw this back in the first decade of the millennium after the tech bust of 1999. Remember the market bust of 1990? Equities were basically flat for 10 years. The only reason you earned a return on equities at all in the S&P 500 was from dividends. There was no price appreciation. And we basically hit something similar to that. The earning situation is not as bad. But again, when you get to these levels of valuation in the equity markets, it portends for poor future performance, generally in the single digits to maybe even negatives.
I have another question. Your rec in recommendation 5, which is what I'm looking at, the Russell 1000 value goes from 0 to 21%. What kind of fund is that?
That
We're not.
is the, I'm sorry, Don, it's the product, the Russell, the large cap value dividend select product.
Okay, so it's large cap, okay.
Value dividend select product that the performance and the commentary was included after that last board meeting.
You're not currently in that product right now, so we're
Right, that's what I said.
recommending we move in there as an alternate to the option overrider because of
Which is
lower volatility, less risk.
the one that I'm most comfortable with is number 5, but again, what's everybody else think?
I think number 5 looks the most attractive as well.
Yeah, that was my choice as well.
When you sell this stuff, do you do it over time, or do you, so you kind of spread out the ups and downs?
That is something that we can, Don and Rich and Keith and I can have some discussion on. The equities are very easy to transition and very low cost. The covered call portfolio, given that there's short options on it and things like that, that might take a little while longer. And by a little while, I just mean maybe a week. But the goal would be to maintain the overall portfolio being as fully invested as possible during that transition.
Yeah, and on the fixed income side, the portfolio is, also very liquid. We're buying, large liquid issues across the major sectors of the fixed income market. So, we could buy a majority of this portfolio fairly quickly as equity assets were sold, and we could invest them.
I'm just thinking because the market's going crazy right now. I'd hate to see it all happen on a day when the market's up and we're low and we're selling low. You can spread it out over a month or two. I don't know how you usually do it, but it's just a suggestion.
And I think we don't want to be in a place where we're timing the market because, I mean, from my understanding, no one wins when you're trying to time the market. We are really looking at kind of, as you keep saying, is de-risking. Really, I'm not sure in Please, I mean, I'm not an expert in this by any means, but I'm not seeing any signs from this administration that we're heading towards calmer waters, and that nothing is showing that the risk is coming down in our economy, that things are continuing to move, and they're very much from one day to the next. And I think again, moving out of the cover call strategy, moving into de-risking our portfolio for the next, for the rest of this administration, if we have to, is still a place where I'm comfortable going, for the time being, until maybe we get some signs of some increased stability, in our economy and the market.
When was the last time that this committee did a review of the asset allocation? I don't want this. I'm thinking of this as being kind of a knee-jerk thing because this is only my second meeting. But every year, at least, a particular quarter, they should look at this and not just do it because of what's happening right now.
The last time that there was an actual change to the guidelines was 10 years ago.
But do you review it every year in a meeting?
Well, it's always discussed as part of the meeting asset allocation.
But a deep dive once a year, do you do anything more than this one little chart in here that shows the mix?
We do not typically.
Wow. I would recommend that.
So what do we need here? Are we do we want to make a decision on moving this? Do we need a person to make a recommendation for a vote?
Yes. Make
Okay.
a motion.
Would you prefer the three of us to drop off if you want to have some more internal comments amongst yourself?
I
If
don't
you
have
feel this.
any reservations
Okay.
about making comments in front of you guys. I think it's
Okay. I
helpful.
just want to make sure.
That's just me, though. Yeah.
Okay.
I think heading off the instant, it's a roller coaster right now. Just like Tony said, if you try to time it right, one day it's up, one day it's down. But I don't see it changing in the future. And the amount of time it takes this board to make any decision is crazy long. So if we're here with a chance to do it now, then I think we should, because we could always come back and make another change later. It doesn't mean like you're afraid of buying it high when we're buying it low. It's not going to soar so high that we're going to be losing money. I don't believe, unless like we just go on a bender of a run, but I don't see it of where it's at now going so high that we're going to be losing money on the transaction. I think it's a pretty safe bet to kind of hedge ourselves in a little smoother waters. So my recommend like my thing would be is to recommend mix five, and that would be a motion if anyone wanted to second that.
I'll second that.
Do we have any, before I put up for vote, is there any additional commentary that anyone wants to make on Mix 5? Can I propose that, or?
Yeah, I guess my only druthers are to completely remove the covered call. Like, I think that's been our opportunity to, if there is a chance to take, an opportunity that's kind of where it lies. And I think taking it all the way to zero is a bit risky, or a bit less opportunistic. But in general, I agree with Mix 5 as well. Just my thought.
Could we have maybe anyone from FNM comment on that? on the cover on moving cover call to zero and not something in between?
Most of that, or part of that, is because the cover call is a very concentrated portfolio, because the nature of you have to buy long equities and then you're shorting options versus that, and it's fairly labor intensive. And because of every contract has 100 underlying shares, so some of these higher priced stocks you can't you. You can only buy 1 or 200 shares of, because you can only sell 1 or 2 contracts versus those. So having a small portfolio of covered call is very difficult to diversify across equity assets. And that's part of the reason why we've recommended no longer using covered calls, is because the portfolio is concentrated. Whereas if we move that into the S&P product that we manage, or the Russell Large Cap Value product, there's many more equities. And so you'll get diversification from that, which will help with the risk of the portfolio while still staying in equities.
So it sounded like the cover call strategy was, in essence, picking winners potentially versus, as you're saying, is diversification across a broader set of equities.
Well, also, the cover call portfolio has more volatile names in it. And that's why we're hedging it with the short call. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, I would say. You have more volatile names, but you're dampening that volatility with the calls. But when the market is just so crazy up and down, it's difficult to maintain your in the money or out of the money position of where you want those short calls to be when there's so much volatility.
Yeah, I think the cover calls was a part of our portfolio was a great asset for the kind of previous market that we were in, the previous administration's market maybe. And so I think what we're looking at now is kind of changing to this new the new set of rules that we're playing with, and kind of moving away from that volatility. And so I think I that makes sense, what you're saying, and I think that it's definitely in our interest to move away from that aspect of the volatility exposure. Excuse me.
Yeah, thank you for the explanation. Appreciate it.
Any additional comments? So we have Mr. Eisenberg's made a motion to recommend mix five. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Van Herre, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay. The ayes have it. We have a recommendation to enact or move forward with mix number five.
Okay, so Keith, can we touch base in the morning and we will talk about logistics and how we can implement this in the most efficient way.
Yes, that's fine.
Perfect.
Okay. And thank you, FNM, for all of your analysis and for all of the for the additional meeting and for all the time you spent putting this together for us. I really appreciate it.
Great.
Yes,
We
no problem.
appreciate you guys as well.
Okay.
Okay. Have a good
Thank you,
evening.
everybody.
Have a good evening. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
you.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Next on the agenda, we have Heather Mehta from UB Greensfelder. You have the floor.
Thank you all. It's actually a fairly active session in the Missouri House and Senate as it relates to bills that could impact your plan. The biggest thing on the agenda that seems to be moving forward, and there have already been some laws passed on this, have to do with taxes. You may have heard that the Missouri State Senate and House are trying to lower real estate taxes, lower income taxes. The one that is passed is a deduction for any capital gain taxes that are paid under federal income. You can now deduct that from your state income. And so to the degree that your plan is at all funded with local real estate taxes or any other type of local taxes, the funding going to your plan could be impacted because the legislature is seeking to lower all of these things. I don't know, and maybe one of you can answer how if you're funded through real estate taxes or other local taxes. I thought you were because we always talk about all the
Property taxes.
Did she freeze?
real estate to lower real estate taxes. So if that gets passed, that could impact the money coming into your plans. I will keep you updated on how that goes, but it's already there are bills, multiple bills in the House and the Senate addressing taxes. Some of them have already been passed by one and they're working on reconciling them. So it is quite possible that you'll be seeing lower real estate taxes in the future. The other things that are on the agenda but have not moved forward as much are things that we have seen before, like banning investments in companies who engage in boycotts, banning environmental, social, and governance investing decisions, and other things like this. But much like last year, where that was on the agenda and didn't really move forward, there hasn't been much progress this year as well. Taxes seem to be a really hot button issue in the state legislature this year. And that is pretty much my legal update, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about that.
Do
What
we have
are hold
what
on.
those tax reductions will be? Like, are they talking like 10%, 20%?
One of them involves putting a cap on local taxes. But I think generally with the real estate ones, they're looking at reducing assessment percentage for real property, that would then obviously lower taxes and lower the amount of money coming into your plan. Have one up here right now, Senate Bill 87 has already moved past executive hearing, has been placed on the informal calendar in the Senate. But again, there are several of these bills within the Senate and within the House. So clearly, this is something that they're really worked up about for whatever reason.
But does that seem like it's putting a cap on how much you can raise it at one time, or would it force municipalities to bring certain property taxes down to a certain level?
Most of them are looking at reducing the assessment percentage for real property. But it will all depend on what actually gets passed. I know school districts have also been talking about this a lot because they are funded by local real estate taxes as well. So this could have a broader impact than just
Yeah.
government pensions. So anyone owning property, this sounds like a great idea, but anyone with kids in school or who rely on government pensions, it can be a little scary.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
No. Okay. Well, thank you, Heather.
You're welcome.
Next on the agenda, we have the council liaisons and the city manager's comments.
I don't know if I can just, my comment is that I will not be your liaison any longer. And you can see that Lisa Brenner is in the panel with us tonight. She every so often we get reassignments, and I was reassigned after I don't know how many years I've either been a member of the board or the liaison, but I've been here for a long time. But now Lisa's taken over, and so there she is.
I'm the handoff, so I'll get to I'm gonna get with Steve at some point and get more info and hopefully serve you all well.
Thank you, Steve, and welcome, Lisa.
I have one comment for them. It's my understanding that we're short one person on this committee, a citizen person. Is that something, Lisa or Steve, that you try to pursue finding somebody?
Oops. I have a nomination on the next council meeting for the
Oh,
pension board.
okay, good.
I don't have any additional comments.
Any other matters anyone would like to bring to the floor?
Yeah, I have one. I was recently promoted, so with these extra duties that I'm going to undertake, I don't know if I will have the time to be on this board much longer. I was going to say that the next pension meeting would be my last, and then we'll try to get someone to fill in for me or replace me. But I just wanted to give everyone a heads up on that.
Well, congratulations. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Much appreciated.
Captain Eisner now.
Eisenberg.
Captain.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Okay, upcoming meeting
Eisenberg.
dates.
Sorry, saying Eisner.
Eisenberg.
Right. Glad I didn't get that wrong yesterday.
You had an audience there, you know.
Right. More pressure.
Upcoming meeting dates are July 22nd, 2025, and October 28th, 2025, tentatively. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay, go ahead.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. 717, call to order the Police and Fire Employees Retirement System meeting. I guess I'll give you a minute to review the January 28th, 2025 meeting minutes. Any questions or comments about the minutes? We have a motion to approve.
Motion.
We have a second. Mr. Eisenberg, all in favor, say aye.
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 Nay. The ayes have it.
Who made the motion?
Borgia.
Mr.
Mr. Okay.
Porcia.
Gotcha.
Next on the agenda is a proposal from Baker Tilly on analyzing police and fire employees' retirement system.
Yes, included in your packet is a proposal from Baker Tilly that would provide staff with some assistance to be able to analyze the police or the uniform pension plan. Tonight, I have with me Andy Belkmat, who is with Baker Tilly, and I believe is included a short bio of him in the proposal. So, but before taking this item to the mayor and council, I had asked Keith, our finance director, to place this on an agenda to ensure that we are capturing everything that really needs to be reviewed at this point. So, for just a very a quick review, the need for this analysis stems from the trajectory of the uniform plan, that for several years it has trended downward. And so initially it was both planned, the uniform and the non-uniform. We were able to make corrections to the non-uniform, but haven't had the success that we would like with the uniform plan. I believe there is a consensus that we can't continue to operate the pension fund in the same way in the future as we have in the past and expect a different outcome and expect it to be sustainable. We would like to be in a position of providing recommendations of what our outcome of the analysis is to the pension board, and ultimately providing recommendations to the mayor and council from both the pension board as well as from staff. And so with that said, I would open it up, Mr. Chair, for any questions. Andy, I don't know if you wanted to say anything or introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Gregory. I'm Andy Belknap with Baker Tilly. My background is about 20 years as a city manager, public works director, and finance director for three cities and a county. And then I've been, the last 15 years, I've been a consultant for local governments, primarily cities and counties, and primarily within finance, the finance area, and have looked at lots of different pension systems and have helped to, in some cases, to merge agencies together and to create, to transition from pension systems from one to another. So I'm quite familiar with different types of pension systems. In a nutshell, this analysis would be looking at options for University City for the police and firefighters pension systems. In within Missouri, there are over 90 different defined benefit pension systems. About a dozen of those are statewide, and the remainder operate for different municipalities or different identified groups like transportation employees. So there's a lot of defined benefit pension plans operating within Missouri. Our task would be determining which of those might be good matches for University City. Many of those pension plans are designed around police and firefighters. There's at least 20 or 30 that are designed around police and firefighters. I think I don't have any real hypothesis yet about which might be the best matches, but many of the larger municipalities within the state do have police and firefighter pension plans. And so obviously that would be one place to look. But this is really kind of a first step in identification of what might be good places to look. Because as Gregory mentioned, sort of the dashboard statistics for the existing pension plan are not showing great health. They're not, I mean, it's by no means is it a terrible, in terrible condition, but the statistics that you look at for a pension plan are not robust. I'm sure you're aware of this. And so it is a good time to look at options. And that's essentially what this analysis would be. Look at the options and then come back and show those options to you. Be happy to answer any questions that you might have. And we'll be doing some interviews as part of this work and then coming back, doing some analysis. The scope is laid out in the proposal. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about that.
Before getting into the questions, I just want kind of full transparency with this. Andy and I worked together when I was at a different city as city manager, and actually Andy was at a different company. They did a wonderful job for us then. So I have a lot of confidence in him, but I did want to make sure that everyone is aware of that.
Thank you. This is a study that you're going to be doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it paid by the city or by the pension fund?
It's going to be paid by the city. That's what's being recommended.
And you know, in Missouri, so I'm familiar with a couple other departments that have pensions. Is you're looking to get into one of those groups that have multiple cities in them? Is
Well, I
that one of
think
the options you're looking at?
I wouldn't. I'm not in a position right now to rule anything out or in, but I think that probably that would probably be the most natural fit. There's like I said, there's over 90 different plans operating within the state right now, but some of them are very small. The most natural would probably be a plan oriented around police and firefighters, of which there are dozens.
Yeah, I think initially it's really just to identify what is causing the uniform plan to be so expensive, and then identifying options to the mayor and council to make it a more sustainable plan. As most of you know, I was here in the late 90s. And this was not a problem in the late 90s, but the structure was very different. The way that it operated at that time was there were two funding sources. One was the property tax that was approved by the residents for the plan, and then the second was contributions from police and firefighters. Somewhere between the late 90s and 2017, changes were made that created the situation that we are in today. And so it's really to do a deep dive to identify, what those changes were, what the financial impacts have been, and what steps need to be taken in order to meet our obligation of ensuring this is a sustainable plan far into the future for all of our retirees. And what is of great concern to me, which I have shared with many of you, is that I don't believe we have done a cost of living increase for the retirees, for police and fire, since 2008, 2004, somewhere along that line. So what has happened is that each year, as inflation increases, buying power decreases for those. So effectively, what's happening is you are eroding the amount of funds really that the retirees receive because they're buying power is being eroded. So that's why this is such an important issue. Not the only reason, but that's a huge reason that I think this needs to be addressed as soon as possible.
Right, and the reason for that is that the plan, the last actuary showed that the plan was only 73% funded, and industry standard is anything below 80% is a warning sign. And alluding to what Gregory said about the cost, the administrative costs for the plan were at 4.8%. And typically, the benchmark for the administrative costs is they should be between 0.5% and at the high end, 5%. So your administrative costs, because it's a relatively small plan, are really bumping up at the high end. So those are two sort of statistics that are not the best for the existing plan, and we'd like to improve on.
I think I saw it in the package somewhere, but I don't know where. What is the number of active employees versus the active versus the number of retirees in this plan?
There's a total of 223 participants, and 110 are active employees.
Oh,
So
like 50-50.
basically about half, it looks like about half are retirees.
That doesn't help either.
Well, but that's not, I wouldn't call, that's not atypical. But a couple, some of the statistics associated with the plan don't look great. That's why I think it makes sense to take a look at some options.
And I've been on the board for a number of years, and we've always been with some iteration of FNM, and I've never personally been involved or seen an analysis of their costs compared to other portfolio managers. I'm assuming kind of portfolio manager costs will be a part of your analysis, as well as what other what other pensions are using, and comparing our costs to their costs, and what they're maybe even what they're getting for their fee.
Sure. Yeah, we'll take a look at that. But my a priori sort of assumption is it's a relatively small plan, which is makes tends to make the administrative costs higher.
So, I just want to make sure that there was that we are capturing the scope that the things that we should be looking at for the type of analysis that we just described. And if this is successful in going through approval by the mayor and council, the intention will be to not just work with the council and with the police and fire representatives for the pension, but also with the pension board as a whole. So the intention will be to bring that information back to you. I think I mentioned having a recommendation from the pension board as well as from staff to the council regarding any proposed changes that I end up making. Or I end up recommending to the council.
Sounds great.
I mean, obviously something, we need to re, something needs to be done. As you said, 80% is a warning, and we're at 73%. So we've got to see what other pension funds are doing to see what we got to do differently, because we obviously can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result.
Yeah.
Andy, how long does a study like this generally take?
This won't take too long. It'll take about between 2 and 3 months.
Any further questions? Okay.
I guess
Thank you.
some would need
Thank
to,
you,
I
Andy.
guess, make a motion to approve the proposal.
Oh, okay.
We make a motion? The kids paying for it. It seems like they'd be the one who vote on it. I mean, we could give recommendations or
Yes.
suggestions.
Okay. So you're wanting a recommendation from the board to the city council and
Oh,
mayor?
I think that would, I think that they would appreciate a recommendation. Yeah.
Yeah, I see no harm in that. I'll have a motion to use this company to fund the study.
We have a recommendation to use this company to perform this study as funded by the city.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that a little bit for me. I appreciate
I thought that's what you're probably getting at.
that. Yeah.
I'll second that.
Okay, Mary, a second. And do we have a all in favor say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay. The ayes have it.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity. I look forward to coming back when I know more.
Ah,
Thank
thank
you,
you.
Andy. Looking forward to it as well.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is a review and approval of the disbursements through March 31st. I'll give you a moment to review.
I have a very basic question. What is the plan year for these plans?
Fiscal year?
Well, the plan year for the pension plan, yeah.
It's along with the fiscal year, so July 1 to June 30.
Okay. So we're near the end of the plan year.
Yes.
That's one more quarter to go. Okay.
Any questions or comments regarding the disbursements through March 31st? Do we have a...
Why is cash so much higher? You're not earning anything. Do we have a need for that liquidity more than we did last year?
It's just collection from the taxes that we receive. Just accumulation. We haven't moved any money probably in a year.
Somebody looking at, you know, whether we need to have that much in cash rather than having it invested.
Yeah, normally I usually just keep about $1 million in cash and then we could invest remain, you know.
I don't know what the right number is, but unless there's a reason, you know, it's over 1.4 million higher than it was last year in cash. And, you know, we're not earning any deeply on that. I just think it's something that should be looked at.
Well, typically, if we want to make any movement, then the board would make a recommendation.
You need to do any kind of analysis for us to make a recommendation first? Should we wait till next time?
So I guess per this conversation, Keith, you say you normally keep $1 million, but right now we're, if I'm reading that correctly, we're at 3.6 million in cash. So we're.
Correct. I mean, I would like to at least have $1 million just to be on the conservative side, comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We do, you know, use that to pay out the benefits and that, but if the board feels comfortable of making a recommendation to move.
You don't think you need to do any kind of analysis and let's decide next quarter? You think that you're happy with, you know, even changing it to 2 million instead of 3.6 million?
No, I mean, I'd be comfortable with moving 2 million.
What account would you put it in, or where would someone want to put it?
It would go into the UMB, the investment accounts.
Based on the percentage, yeah.
And I guess with that move, we need to time it to after implementing Mix 5 or before.
I mean, we could wait until after that all gets settled and but
Like worst case scenario, how much do you would you have to have on hand to pay out? I mean, not to try to like tie you down to a number, but you said you like to keep about a million. I mean, is a million comfortable, or is it
Yeah,
right down the
that's
bubble?
I'm comfortable with a million.
Okay. Does it, I
Will you
mean,
make a motion?
you can make a motion. Yeah, I would. I mean,
I'd rather be a little more conservative and say leave 1.5 million in cash, but Keith knows the numbers better than I do. I just tend to be. What's the monthly payout and benefits?
for each month, it's let's see. It's about 175 between
Okay, then
a
you've
month.
got expenses and everything, so 200, 250 a
I
quarter.
mean, that's just the benefits
Right,
to
yeah.
the retirees.
Right. So even if it was, and then of course you've got money coming in too, but even if it was 250 a quarter, $1 million would give you 4 months. And so make a motion for $1 million if Keith's happy with that, staying in the cash.
So the motion would be that we move a million, but should we add on to the a time frame or when we want this money moved, potentially after Mix 5 is implemented?
I feel as
Five.
though it's pertinent to wait until we've switched to Mix 5. I think that would be ideal. I would think.
I would feel comfortable to wait until all that gets changed
So we want to merge
and
those together then?
yeah.
Okay, somebody else make the motion because I'd rather do it sooner than later, but
Motion to change cash on deposit to $1 million pertinent to the end after we've switched to Mix 5.
Okay, I'll second that.
Do I have to rescind my motion?
And I just want to confirm the motion is to move $1 million or to reduce cash on deposit to a million.
Well,
I
we
think you
had a
said reduce it to a million.
Yes.
Is that what is that? Are you comfortable with that, Keith, or were you comfortable with another?
So we're moving 2 million over to UMB investments.
Which would actually leave then we're leaving 1.6 and change. So we're, the motion would be to move 2 million.
That gives them at least a little extra leeway too, so right? A little more conservative.
Okay. Is that okay, Devin? I don't
Yeah,
I mean to just
certainly,
want to
certainly,
kind of
yeah.
make sure we've got the scope right here.
Absolutely,
Would
yeah, absolutely.
you mind remaking your
Yeah,
motion?
so motion to switch cash on deposit to move $2 million for cash on deposit after we switch to Mix 5.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Eisenberg. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Nay. Oh, the ayes have it. Thank you.
I have another question too, just because I'm new to this. This will help both me and Lisa. Explain to me why we pay disability insurance premiums and then we pay disability payout. I don't understand that. And if we have disability insurance, why doesn't the insurance company pay the disability payment?
I'll get further clarification on that. Now I'll email that to you.
Okay. Yeah, because like I said, we're paying out twice, once for premiums and once for payments.
Do we have a any further questions, comments on the disbursements? Do we have a motion to approve the disbursements?
I make a motion.
We have a second.
Second.
Mr. Dietzler, all in favor say aye.
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 Next on the agenda, we have new member applications. This is for informational purposes, review only. We have two of them tonight, Daniel Williams and Kimberly Edmond.
Sorry, I'm the one who always has so many questions, but why do we even include these in the packet? I mean, what do we need to know this for when there's somebody hired?
Because the board needs to approve the new members.
Is it in the plan document? What, you know, I mean, the minute the thing says that the board has to approve new members? I don't, you know, people, when you hire them, they could leave, you know, they might not work out and they could be gone a month from now or they could be around 20 years from now. I don't care who's the new hires, and I don't know why we need them in the packet.
Well, on the application, it states on number 30, it's the approved by the board of the trustees at a meeting held. So,
oh,
I mean,
okay.
We could change the application, but
I don't know. I just,
it's
like
just
a
part
waste of paper to me, but if that's in there, that's fine.
It's part of the process.
So I guess, Keith, I mean, number five for the agenda is for informational purposes only. Are we doing an approval of new member applications or just reviewing them?
It's informational purposes. So, I mean, yeah, it's just basically reviewing
okay.
And then reviewing just, yeah, it's basically informational.
Okay. But for number 30, should we be approving them?
Right. Yeah. I mean, according to the application.
I think the way it was explained to me is that this is our bookkeeping for our members, so we need to approve that the bookkeeping is correct. Like they're, because doesn't have their next of kin or their whoever, whatever it is called, yeah, spouse and everything on it and everything like that. So if something happens to them, that's just our membership application. So like we have to make sure our paperwork's all in a row, or all our ducks are in a row. It's not like we can say, no, you can't get in it, but we got to make sure our paperwork. So it's a review of the paperwork.
Got it.
I mean, I agree that paperwork needs to be reviewed. I just don't know that it's us who needs to do it.
Well, yes. I mean, I think in past meetings, it has been a good opportunity for us to review it and call out any errors or any missing pieces
of
information.
We have found several errors, yeah.
So the approval process is not a formal meeting approval, but do you know, I think approval is in this context is used to approve of the bookkeeping, as Mr. Eisenberg said, not so much do we approve of the new member, him or herself. Okay. So if there's no questions or comments regarding these new member applications, we do not have any retirement applications seeking approval. So moving on to any other matters. Okay, no other matters. The Upcoming meeting dates are tentatively July 22nd, 2025, and October 28th, 2025. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Mr. Eisenberg, a second?
Second.
Mr. Forsha, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Nay. The ayes have it. Meeting is adjourned at 7:50 p.m. 7:50 p.m. Call to order the non-uniformed employees retirement system. We have the approval of the January 28th, 2025 meeting minutes.
I move approval of the January 28th meeting minutes.
We have a second. We have a second.
I'll second.
Mr. Diesler, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Nay. The ayes have it. We give you a moment to review the disbursements. Do we have a motion to approve the disbursements through March 31st, 2025?
I move approval of disbursements.
We have a second.
Did you ask for questions?
Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I mean, it's a good thing, but is there any particular reason why investment securities went up $2 million? But it's a good thing.
Would you mind repeating your question?
Yeah, under assets, 1050 is investment securities. It's $2 million higher than last year, which is a good thing. I just wonder, I'm just curious if you knew of any particular reason for that.
I mean, I can get down in the weeds on it, but overall, I mean, it was the market at that quarter was good.
Oh, okay.
But I can do a deep
Well, that's
dive.
fine. Like I said, it's good, so I'm not so worried about it as if it were bad.
I mean, it might not look too good next quarter,
Yeah,
but
really.
so right now it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Any additional questions or comments? We had a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nay. The ayes have it. Next on the agenda is new member applications. Again, this is for informational purposes only. Please review, and if you have any comments or questions regarding those applications.
Just note that Sloan Marion, the from library, and Regan Slaughter from the library. We're still waiting to get those, so I don't have copies of them yet. They're not in the packet.
I guess my takeaway is I think it's wonderful that so many people are joining University City in both the uniform and non-uniform capacity, that folks are that we're still hiring and that people are still interested in taking on roles with the city.
Yeah, it's good.
Any questions or comments regarding the applications? Moving on, we are needing to approve retirement applications for Dallas Dufer and Paula Battle.
Just the opposite, where I think you're giving us too much information on new employees. I don't think, I mean, compared to what I'm used to, if we approve these, we should see the actual calculation. Not, I know they're very complicated and we're not going to totally understand them, but I mean, how can we approve them when all we have is the people paper that says they're retiring? I mean, that's. Can we at the next meeting have at least an example of a calculation for somebody who retires?
I guess Heather, is that legally? I guess can we do that? Include that in the packet?
Let me check on that and email you. I would think so,
Yes,
but
you
I
can,
don't.
because
I
I've done it
wouldn't.
on other pension committees.
Yeah, I would think so, but I just want to make sure there's no like privacy laws that would prohibit that. I don't think there are.
Okay.
I mean, you guys are the administrators of the plan and you have fiduciary duties regarding it. So I think it's probably okay, but just let me double check.
Yeah, and
Once
we
they
also see
retire,
their
we know how
disbursement
much they
reports.
get when we look at the expenses, you know. So it's not a secret. And we're the committee who's supposed to approve them. You know, this doesn't give us anything. Yeah, before I can approve anything, I need to see something more than this. That's all I'm saying.
Well, are we okay moving with the approval of these two?
Mean, I'm going to vote no because it's such a
I
tiny
would
thing,
move
but I think it
approval
would
of
feel bad.
I'm gonna move that we approve these two retirees
Yeah,
because
my second.
pattern of what we've done before.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve. We have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Nay.
Okay.
Nay. The ayes have it. We have approved the retirement applications for Dallas Dufer and Paula Battle. But I think, Keith, it has been noted that some more information be provided per Heather's analysis of what additional information can be included, including retirement amounts that will be distributed per retiree to help with our approval process.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I have the benefit. I mean, I can tell you what Dallas is getting. He's getting $896.57. So, that's his benefit, monthly benefit. So,
Yeah, usually in the past, Keith has always just told us, but he's always had it right in front of him.
And would that be enough, Marianne?
I'm a financial person. And again, I know it's not an easy calculation. You know, there's, you know, paragraph this applies, paragraph that applies, but still, you know, I would like to see more, you know, like years of service and, you know, some things to show how that number was derived at. For us to do our due diligence.
Okay.
So, I guess, yeah, there would be a couple things we could potentially change moving forward at some point on this. I guess is it an application? Yeah, affidavit application. Specifically, I've noticed that number three, the dates of service claiming credit. I understand that to mean that the 3 years for which the benefit will be calculated. So we probably want to clear that up because I don't think I've ever actually seen anybody fill out section three correctly. And then I guess the other thing we'd probably want on there would be the years of service claimed. I don't think I've seen that on there.
Doesn't show a
And
retirement
then,
date.
excuse me?
It doesn't show a retirement date.
Just so a clean number in terms of the years of service being claimed would be another thing to add. And then I don't know if we'd want in, because it's generally just Keith is giving us the number, and that we're approving that, which I was comfortable with. But if we wanted to move to that, having some kind of documentation for that, I'd be open to that as well, just to address the issues of the application.
Okay. Thank you. Keith has taken note, and he will provide additional information regarding retirement applications to provide to allow us to do a little bit further due diligence for our next meeting. So thank you very much for all your comments. Any other matters? Upcoming meeting dates are July 22nd, 2025, and October 28th, 2025. Those are tentative dates. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Thank you very much. It's 8 o'clock, 8:01. Thank you very much for everyone for your time and wonderful discussion analysis tonight. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for
Thanks.
leading it.